The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
How we treat the nation of Israel, politically, militarily, in support, has a direct impact on things that happen to us. We'll discuss that over the course of the next hour. I'm Derek Gilbert of PID Radio. You'll find us on the web at PIDradio.com. I'm also the host of the interview program, A View from the Bunker, at VFTB.net. We're live at the Prophecy Summit at Branson 2012. Our guest to discuss the nation of Israel and how it's intertwined with our own future is a native of New Orleans, graduate of the University of New Orleans with a degree in political science, where he completed the four-year curriculum in 2 years. I feel like a real slacker. He founded a group of successful insurance agencies in 1981, which he sold in 1999. Ran for state insurance commissioner in 1983 in Louisiana as a Republican, and won 45% of the statewide vote against an incumbent Democrat, which, as I understand, is about as difficult as winning votes against an incumbent Democrat in Chicago.
It's tough.
He served as the Louisiana First District Chairman of President Reagan's reelection committee, accepted Jesus Christ as Savior in 1995, and now attends First Baptist Church of New Orleans, where he's been active in inner-city outreach ministries. And he's authored two books, which will form the basis of our discussion today, The Israel Omen and The Israel Omen II. It's our honor to welcome David Brennan to the Prophecy Summit.
It's a pleasure to be here, Derek. Thank
you. This is an interesting topic, and one that sometimes turns a bit contentious when we talk about the way we deal with Israel, what we do to Israel, and how it affects us. There are some people, especially, dare I say, from New Orleans, who might take offense to that in the wake of Katrina. What connections do you see?
Well, you know, certainly there is some type of oddity in all of this, and that is that there's no debating the fact that historically significant disasters are coinciding with efforts to remove the Promised Land from Israel. There's just no debating that. It is a historical fact. You know, there's no difficulty in finding information pertaining to the dates of these calamities, such as when Hurricane Katrina was first identified in the Caribbean, to the political effort that was taking place at that time. And we can get into that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that you'll face sometimes when you talk about the subject is, and I've heard this from some Christians, is they say, well, you know, maybe you can line up a coincidence of a disaster with other events. And my response to them is, okay, but this is what you have to do. Only use historically significant events, number one. And when you do that, you have absolutely eliminated a whole host of calamities. And then on top of that, there has to be no question whatsoever about the coincidence. You can't fudge it. You can't force it. And also, try to find in some book, because we use the Bible, try to find some book that warned that such events would take place. And when you come down to all of those, I say good luck to you, because you're just not going to do it. John McTernan and William Koenig wrote several books on the topic years ago, and they pioneered the effort toward this understanding. And I mention them in my book. But my book takes it to another direction. I look at the financial meltdown that took place in 2008. And this is a thing. We've got, in the book, in the Israel Omen, nine of these coincidences that are looked at. The 10th one is the financial meltdown. And in order to find it, it's not easy to match it up. And I really feel like the Lord led me to it, in fact, because I read a lot. I probably literally read 10,000 articles in the last 3 years. That's not an exaggeration. I just read to be on top of things. And I was curious about why the financial collapse happened. And I read an article that was touting an understanding of it, which led me to buy a gentleman's book. And as I read the book, and I was in the midst of writing The Israel Omen at that time, and I kind of deviated from writing it for a moment. I read this guy's book. And I came to realize as I was reading it that this is incredible, because he identified the reason for the financial meltdown was that there was a banking crisis. We know it was a banking crisis. Mm-hmm. Okay, no question about that. But what caused the banking crisis? Okay, it was international lending between banks. It absolutely locked up. It froze solid. If you're a banker and I'm a banker and I need to borrow, let's say, you know, $1 million tonight because I just had a lot of money withdrawn from my bank, I can go into the international banking system, overnight system, and borrow that $1 million at this was the historical average was 0.07%.
Okay.
I don't want to get too technical here, but this is going to tie in the financial crisis to an effort to remove the land, because it's just bizarre what's been happening. So, all right, you've got the ability then also, I might, if I have a ton of deposits come in, I'm going to be loaning that money into the international banking system, overnight lending, because I'm not at all concerned. Heck, I'm lending to another bank. What is there to worry about? Well, that's the lifeblood of the banking system, and it's that lifeblood that dried up, which caused all of the issues that we saw. So what this gentleman's book indicated was that he said, look at what happened to this premium. The technical term is it's the OIS LIBOR rate. Mm-hmm. Another way to put it is the premium charged by banks to banks to borrow and lend money on the international overnight banking system. And it averaged 0.07% for years and years. Well, on July 26th, 2007, it jumped up 50%. It went from there to 0.364%. Statistically, it's referred to as a Sigma 6.2 event. To say that in English, that means it's an event, a financial event that should happen once every 6,800 years. Extremely unlikely. So what else was happening the week of July 26th? Well, let's first go back. We're going to get back to that in just a moment. On April 30th, 2003, the international group formed by President George W. Bush called the Quartet came together. The Quartet consists of the United States, Russia, the EU, European Union, and the United Nations. Okay. They have one purpose, peace in the Middle East, but the only way to get there, scatter the land, take it away from Israel, and give it to the Palestinians for their own state. So they meet for the first time. And their meeting was delayed because of 9/11. That's another story. But they are delayed, and that's a big deal to the Middle Easterners. They say, hey, you guys got to meet. You know, we got to get this thing going. So they finally meet April 30th, 2003. On that same day began a series of tornadoes in the midsection of the United States that after about a four-week time span was 562, which was a record for tornadoes. Mm-hmm. Weather, and also there was like 1,500 hailstorms, it was crazy weather. Weather experts said that this was the, quote, worst weather in U.S. history. Just happened to begin the day that the quartet met. Okay? Well, the next effort for the quartet, where they got together with a big, big event, was the Annapolis Peace Conference in November of 2007. Now, that was a let's get the land from Israel bazaar, with every nation attending saying something pertaining to that. Syria wanted the Golan Heights back, and so forth and so on. Well, the effort to get that gathering launched began July 23rd, 2007, with Tony Blair, the former British Prime Minister, going to the Middle East. And we have, coincidentally, the global financial meltdown beginning its march to destruction while he's there. Now, as hard as I tried digging into what he was doing on July 26th, if there was any record of him talking to the Israelis and pressuring them, or couldn't find it. You know, pretty secretive once you get to that level. But the interesting thing about the quartet, when you look at those two instances where they went up against the land of Israel, is that the quartet is a group of four. Quartet. You know, typically we think of a band when we think of a quartet. Mm-hmm. But,
well, I think a cappella, but I sing barbershop. So.
Okay. Well, this is political quartet. It's the international quartet for political powers. Not necessarily nations, but powers. Mm-hmm. Because two of them, the European Union and the United Nations, are not nations. They're political powers. These four political powers get together, and for the express purpose of removing the land from Israel. It's a pretty significant thing. And it just so happens that the prophet Zechariah wrote in his first chapter, right at the end of his first chapter, he's talking about how there's going to be a time when there's four political entities that are going to come together. And these entities, it refers to as horns, Zechariah's horns. And these four horns are dedicated to the express purpose of scattering the land of Israel, which is exactly what we're looking at mm-hmm. that the quartet was doing. So you have four horns coming together. Within the prophecy, it also says that there's going to be, the Lord will send carpenters. Mm-hmm. This is not a carpenter you want to hire, because these carpenters come to fray. And they came, and in the prophecy talks about how they're going to fray the land. I'm sorry, they're going to fray the nations that go up against the land. So we see that on April 30th, 2003, and then we see it again in 2007. Both events with the quartet. Now, there's some biblical scholars over the course of centuries, when they took a look at that prophecy, they said that, well, that's got to be nations in Israel's past, because we know Israel can't come back in the land mm-hmm. as a nation again. That's impossible. I mean, you know, they believe Bible prophecy, and no, you know, they're in heaven, these guys, but they could not bring themselves to believe the literal fulfillment of that prophecy. It was a little far-fetched. Mm-hmm. Kind of like us believing that the Aztec Indians, the Aztec nation, is going to come back into existence. You know,
yeah, yeah.
It's hard to believe. You know? So they thought that it was a symbolic coming back. And so they came up with replacement theology. The church is replacing Israel. So they said that these four horns have to be Babylon, who did in fact scatter the land, mm-hmm. also has to be Greece, and also has to be Rome.
Rome.
And, oh my gosh.
Assyria?
No. I'm doing that thing that the governor of Texas did when he needed to name that. that other one. All right, let's see. We've got We've got Media Persia. Did I say that? I
no.
didn't say them. Okay.
Yeah.
But Media Persia didn't scatter them. In fact, to the benefit of Daniel,
yeah.
they were released to go back.
It was Cyrus
just
and Sinbad,
the opposite.
Yeah.
They were gathering. So that really doesn't qualify as one of the four, if you think about it, from the perspective of what Zechariah is saying to look for. And also in the case of Alexander the Great, yeah, he conquered Palestine, but he had no axe to grind with the Jews. He just left them alone. He had bigger fish to go fry, heading to the east. So it just didn't fit. And it fits very well that this is actually Zechariah's four horns. So it kind of almost begs the question, all right, we look back at the times when Egypt, the Israelites were leaving Egypt, and we saw supernatural events unfold. Then we look back at the time that Jesus walked the earth, and we see more supernatural events unfolding. So it kind of begs the question, what should we expect to see if possibly the end times are beginning or about to begin or we're in some phase of that nature? And we're going to see supernatural events. And that's what a lot of people at this conference are talking about. So mm-hmm. we're looking at the four horns of Zechariah, for one thing.
Okay. Now, let's take a step back just to establish the foundation for this theory that God is protective of his people. And that he warned the. Where do we find in Scripture those warnings from the Lord that as you do unto Israel? So, you know, basically tying our future here in the West, United States,
sure.
to how we treat Israel.
Sure. You know, we look in the book of Ezekiel, Jeremiah, talks about do not mess with Jerusalem in particular. It would be a cup of trembling to the nations. The book of Zechariah, the four horns prophecy, specifically talks about the scattering by the horns and what's going to happen to the nations. So I think the Lord has made it clear, because there's so much scripture pertaining to the regathering of the Jews and that the land is their inheritance. This significant scripture talking about that if he's going to restore a people and give a people the land, it does not behoove man to attempt to remove that land. You can expect the Lord is going to do something mm-hmm. in response to that.
So now for those of us who haven't kept tabs on the political machinations over the last few years, what proposals have the quartet put forward for allegedly to resolve the friction between the Israelis and the Palestinians?
The quartet actually has talked about in the past coming out and actually acknowledging a Palestinian state. So you would have, in that event, the world community with the United States, the European Union, and Russia, you know, your major powers, coming out and saying explicitly, we recognize these borders. They talked about that leading up to President Obama's speech on May 19th of last year, of 2011, in which he came out with what can only be described as draconian moves against the Promised Land. One of the things that he talked about doing was to bisect Israel so that there would be no need to have a bisected Palestinian state. He talked about a contiguous Palestinian state. Well, to connect Gaza with the West Bank, something's got to be divided, and that is Israel. And the interesting thing is that implies that no part of Israel is sacrosanct, because that is a part of Israel that would have to be bisected that has not been under dispute. So, you know, and that's the other thing about, you look at the Gaza Strip. We know that Israel withdrew from Gaza. And actually, the day that the Israeli foreign ministry declared the withdrawal was officially completed was August 23rd, 2005. That is, excuse me, the exact day that Hurricane Katrina was first spotted, the very first day. Hmm. And ironically, if you remember, if you look back at the news reports in the Gaza Strip, you had Israeli settlers who were refusing to leave climbed on their rooftops to be removed. I'm a New Orleanian. I fled Katrina. I never fled a storm before in my life, but that one I left, Lord, lay it on my heart, get out of Dodge. People were on their rooftops.
Yes.
It's weird, you know? But is it weird? Because the Lord tells us to be watchful and sober. So, okay, if he says be watchful and sober, then obviously there's something to watch. So what is it that we're to watch? And perhaps, and I get into this in the Israel Omen 2, perhaps it's a sequence of events, strange coincidences that believers would pick up on, but the rest of the world will not, such as coincidences of catastrophes lining up with efforts to remove the Promised Land. You know, to the non-saved, to the non-believer, the whole concept that the land is Israel's because the Lord has given it to them is nonsense to them. But to us, the believers, it's not. So therefore, we are watching what happens. So it's strange times, supernatural times. Mm.
Katrina was obviously a huge event. Presumably, you mentioned other coincidences. What are some of the other significant events that would tie our treatment of Israel to things that have happened here that we would have noticed?
You know, one of the first ones that starts off this whole series was in 1991. President George Bush, the first Bush, after the Gulf War, he had a lot of clout in the Middle East. So he thought, you know, this is the time to go in and let's try to get a Middle East peace treaty done. So what he did, he put pressure on the Israelis. Shamir, at the time, was the prime minister of Israel. He very grudgingly went along with Bush's idea because, after all, we're the United States and they're Israel. They need us.
Yeah.
So eventually it produced what was called the Madrid peace process. They met in Madrid, Spain, and it was the Israelis. They had a Palestinian representative. They had a bunch of other Middle Eastern countries there. But a strange thing happened on the way to the meeting. You know the movie, The Perfect Storm?
Yes.
I saw it. You probably saw it, too.
Yeah,
it was a real popular movie.
Read the book, yeah.
Awesome, yeah. And, well, that particular storm was really weird. That was three weather systems, as you know, that combined into one. And they went to the Atlantic Ocean. They came together, and you would have thought, well, maybe they would just cancel each other out. You know, who knows what's going to happen when three storms come together. But they kind of met, hugged each other, and said, hey, let's join forces. And they did. And then they did something really weird. They engaged in what's called retrogression. And that is to say that instead of moving east and up into the North Atlantic and just dissipating, they began moving west back toward the coast of the United States. And that storm hit on the day that they were meeting in Madrid. It just so happened that it produced 100-foot waves. It was just a real weird storm. Bob Case, who was a meteorologist in charge of kind of overseeing that whole picture, was quoted as saying it was like a once-in-a-100-year storm. Very unusual. Well, George Bush's home in Kennebunkport, Maine, yeah. I shouldn't laugh at this, but it was swamped with a wave. The wave went into his home and just took his furniture and brought it out to the sea. And while he was in Madrid, Spain, trying to give away the land. That was a significant first effort, a significant success as well, because I categorized these efforts, and there's a reason for that. Then the Madrid meetings continued, but they didn't get anywhere, because Shamir was like, no, we're not giving up the land. We're not that crazy. We're just not going to give it up. But he stood for re-election. And by the way, nothing really calamitous happened in Madrid 2, 3, 4, 5. No progress was made. And that's significant, okay, because I actually created a matrix as to what to look for in the first book. And the matrix says basically after an initial success like that, if no significant progress is made, then no historical calamity coincides. It's crazy, but it seems to work. Well, Shamir loses to Rabin. Rabin wins. He's a land for peace guy all the way. He goes to the sixth conference of Madrid, okay? He is there ready to deal. The Syrian delegation afterwards said, this is a whole different atmosphere. They're really dealing, okay? In other words, he was willing to give up the land. And in fact, tremendous, quote, progress was made. Well, on the day that they met is the day that Hurricane Andrew struck South Florida. I'm sure just another coincidence. The next year, the progress that was made at Madrid as Andrew was striking, that was very distractive for George Bush, by the way. The next year, because of the progress that was made at Madrid, Rabin sent a secret delegation to Oslo to negotiate with a Palestinian delegation. They negotiated from April to August. Then they came up with the Oslo Accords, which was just, you know, touted as a tremendous peace agreement. Well, you never guess what happened as they were negotiating from April to August of that year. What is called the greatest natural disaster in U.S. history unfolded, the Great Flood of 1994. Another coincidence. So then Bill Clinton sees the success that he had with Oslo. Of course, it just fell apart, Oslo, because the Palestinians were, they're just not serious about peace. They have one goal in mind, and that is the destruction of Israel. Their religious beliefs do not tolerate a Jewish state in the Middle East, especially possessing Jerusalem. So Arafat is out. He gets quoted a few times talking about how this is just a false peace. We just made this peace agreement, you know, in order to suck the Israelis in. Okay, so Clinton ignores that. He then goes to Assad of Syria. And this is the Assad who's the father of the Assad that is over there right now. And he talks to Assad on January 16th, 1994. The meeting breaks up. On January 18th, the leader, Rabin of Israel, announces to the Israeli public that, look, we have a real tough decision to make. We need to do something about giving up the Golan Heights because Syria wants peace. We need to give it back. Okay, we need to have some vote on this. Now, between the 16th, when Clinton met with Assad, and the 18th, when Rabin made the announcement, something happened on the 17th. Clinton spoke to Rabin. Obviously, they didn't use telepathy. You know, Rabin didn't guess what happened when Clinton met with Assad. They talked. And Clinton obviously put a lot of pressure on Rabin. So what else happened on January 17th, 1994? The highest instrumentally recorded earthquake in an urban area in U.S. history, the Northridge earthquake. So it just goes on and on.
And just to clarify chronology, then the great
flood of the Midwest, the Missouri, Mississippi rivers preceded that. That would have been the summer of 93.
That's right.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Correct.
And
yes.
I remember that very well because I went to work for a company shortly thereafter that could point to a pole out in the lot with a stripe 8 feet off the ground. It said
scary.
That was the high water mark.
We could do that in New Orleans.
Yes, absolutely.
Look at the eaves of your house. Yeah, that's the watermark.
So we're one of the interesting things that has kind of puzzled me as a political observer over the years is the tendency for conservative Christians to assume that the Republican Party is a protector and defender of Israel. Now, I don't know if you've seen Matt Drudge's website here in the last few days. He's reporting that the leading candidate for vice presidential, presumptive presidential nominee, Mitt Romney, the leading vice presidential candidate is Condoleezza Rice. And Ms. Rice, prior to the end of 2008, made a statement that the time has come for a two-state solution.
Right.
Do you see going forward a difference, and if so, what is it, between the two major political parties in the United States and how we treat Israel?
Twiddly-dee and twiddly-dum, pretty much. You know, I think somebody like Rick Santorum understands what's happening. What are the odds of him winning? I don't know. You know, our country has moved in a real bad direction, and the Lord is merciful and very patient, and I know he's called us for many, many years, but eventually he will release a people to the full recompense of their actions. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think we're not going to be electing any real Christians, if you know what I mean.
If we ever have. But
yeah.
That's a whole nother show. The political situation in the Middle East right now, as we record this on the 13th of July in 2012, is dicey, or dicier than usual even. It's been reported that the Russians have now sent that ship with the attack helicopters once again. The Turks are still angry about one of their fighter jets that was downed by the Syrians. And there's some question as to whether that took place over Syrian soil or out over international waters, as the Turks claim. We've got a presumably nuclear nation in the center of all of this. We certainly have other Muslim nations in the region, Pakistan, that has nuclear weapons. What do you see coming down the pike as these things unfold?
Well, I mean, it's a very dangerous situation because Syria, in many ways, to Russia is almost like Israel is to us. Not quite that bond. Not quite that bond. But they seem to have a very strong bond. I personally have an issue with the U.S. getting involved in civil wars. I just don't like it. That's not in our tradition.
Well, and that's something I should have mentioned, too, with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton advocating for more intervention in what's happening internally in Syria as part of all of this.
What is really strange is that the same people urging for the United States to become involved in civil wars we're talking about here, and I don't like what is happening to people over there. Don't get me wrong, but we didn't get involved in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s very wisely. When we get involved in civil wars, that's a big problem. And the same people who were vehemently opposed to Iraq, and I personally was opposed to Iraq, although it was a bad policy move because I was more focused on Iran and I thought it would make us unable to deal with the real problem. That's my own perspective. But anyway, the same people critical of going into Iraq are urging us to go into civil wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a form of madness that they're embracing. We are a war-weary nation now, and yet in the world that we live in, war is a fact, and you have to be ready under certain circumstances to go to war. And it's almost as if the nation that, out of all these nations, Libya, Iraq, now maybe Syria, out of all the nations that are a real potential threat to the United States, it's Iran. It's none of the above. And so it's almost like there's some other agenda at play.
And you mentioned Libya, and we can bring Egypt into this as well. The United States came out on the side of the rebels in both of those cases. I mean, obviously, Muammar Gaddafi was not somebody you'd want to bring home to dinner. Hosni Mubarak, who was a heavy-handed ruler, there's no question, but he was at least friendly to the United States and was maintaining a peace with Israel. Democratic uprisings, and I'll put those in air quotes, that we've supported in these nations have now apparently brought more radical Islamist elements to power in Egypt and perhaps in Libya as well. How does this affect what you see happening to Israel in the future?
And actually I write about that in the Israel Omen 2, and I spent about three chapters on it because I build the case that President Obama has had a covert policy as it relates to Israel. You know, we heard him whisper to the leader of Russia, don't worry, I can take care of this, you know, after the election. Well, I build the case that there's enough circumstantial evidence to show that he has an agenda. And I believe, it takes three chapters to do this, that if he is reelected, there will be a peace treaty. Trust me. You know, it was really weird. If you go back to the May 19th speech that he made in 2011, in which he rolled out a big-time change in U.S. policy toward Israel, even the Washington Post, which is not an anti-administration newspaper by any measure, you know, them and the New York Times, flat-out said, this is a big change in U.S. policy. But ironically, here you've got George Mitchell. Mitchell was the point man who got peace in Northern Ireland. Imagine that. I mean, that was what an incredible thing that he achieved. God bless him for it. I mean, he is a statesman's statesman. I mean, the guy was good. So Clinton hires him, naturally, to go try and untie the Gordian knot of the Middle East. Good luck. So he's been over there for about a decade. George Bush kept him on. Barack Obama wisely kept him on. So here Barack Obama on May 19th makes this big Middle East speech, big foreign policy speech concerning George Mitchell's area of expertise. And what did George Mitchell do about 5 days before the speech? He resigned. Okay. So why did he resign? And I tell you, it took serious digging. Almost dug all the way to China to dig up some of this stuff. The New York Times reported that George Mitchell had actually sent his resignation letter about 6 weeks earlier. So it's clear that Barack Obama was trying to get him to stay on. I mean, why the delay in the announcement? Mm-hmm. The fact that the announcement was made just before the big change in U.S. policy shows that he was trying to indicate, hey, I don't approve of this policy. Mm-hmm. So since he felt so strongly against that new U.S. policy toward Israel, and it's draconian, you have to figure once the White House came up with it, he probably tendered the resignation very quickly. His resignation letter was dated April 6th, okay, about 6 weeks before the May 19th new policy announcement by Obama. Well, so you can figure a day or two before that is when the Obama White House came up with their new policy, and that is the beginning. On April 4th, 2011, was the beginning of the worst tornado rampages, not in U.S. history, in world history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tornadoes that tore through Joplin, Alabama, Joplin, Missouri.
Near here.
Yeah. You don't paint a very happy picture going forward, but students of prophecy know that we're in for rough times ahead. In the research that you've done for the Israel Omen and the Israel Omen 2, looking ahead, where do you see what do you see happening to the United States?
The United States is in the thick of attempts to remove the land, no question about it. And if President Obama is reelected, which to me would be a real sign that perhaps we are entering some beginning phase of the times warned of in the Bible, then I think you're going to see such pressure put on Israel that there will be some type of a Palestinian state established. Within the 13 coincidences that have been occurring since 1991, you know, historical calamity, effort to remove the Promised Land, within those 13, there are three common denominators, and they're clear, and they're really indisputable. Every single one of the efforts associated with these 13 has been in the name of peace. Real clear. Just scatter the land, we're going to have peace. It's nonsense to a logical mind, but to the diplomatic world, nonsense will often rule the day. Mm-hmm. So, peace. The other thing is destruction. I mean, we're talking historical destruction. The third common denominator is it all happened immediately. So you have three common denominators that have been repeating like a broken record since 1991. Now, the Lord says, be watchful and sober. Since he says to be watchful, that means there's something to watch. Duh. So what could it be, possibly a broken record of warnings? Peace, then sudden destruction. Peace, then sudden destruction. Playing over and over and over again that only his kids can hear because the world finds it all nonsense. Mm-hmm. So, having written about that in the second book, I can say this to your audience. If you see the land of Israel being divided with a Palestinian state, prepare yourself for the possibility of some great calamity. I hate talking about this in one sense because it is so doomish. We are not to fear. We're children of God. But this is the thing. If these have been warnings, these 13, and they are historically significant calamities in their own right, what does that imply about the ultimate end result of what they're warning about? And that's the thing that is so disconcerting. So when would that happen? If they create a Palestinian state, some major parting of the land, and I would tend to think at the point that the removal has been completed, that it would probably take place, if that thesis is correct.
Just to follow up on one thing you mentioned earlier, you said that there will occasionally be an initial meeting or action of some significance followed by a disaster, and then the follow-up meetings or actions to this initial action don't produce anything significant, then it eventually, you know, nothing
That's
comes
right.
of those. What do we see in cases where you've got an initial action followed by other actions that are significant and build on that initial action?
You see calamity. A significant new success brings calamity, even if it's a part of a previous effort. It's almost like a certain form of justice in the sense that the first effort on the part of a president brings it. It's really weird how that works. The perfect storm was coinciding with the first Bush's first effort, and so on and so forth. A new effort that is breaking new ground seems to bring it. And then a new success seems to bring it. But if they just meet and nothing comes of it, nothing seems to happen.
Hmm. So presumably, as we move toward the ultimate goal of dividing Israel, should that succeed, presumably as a result of a number of successful actions, we would see then a series of calamitous events.
I tend to think it's going to be one big event.
Hmm.
In the first book, I set up what I call the political catastrophe matrix. This thing is off the wall, okay? It says, okay, based on what we've seen in the first book, based on what we've seen from these 10 events, if you see the following, you should expect a significant disaster to unfold, okay? I mean, it's a brazen thing that I did there. I almost didn't even do it. But, you know, as I looked at the events, I said, you know, there are some commonality to them. When it happens, when it doesn't happen, okay, let's just lay it out. People, you just take it for whatever it's worth, okay? And I point out, I say, look, if these things do not hold true going forward from here, then it's just some weird historical anomaly, mm-hmm. and that's all it is, okay? You got to question the thesis if it doesn't continue. Well, it did continue. As a result, the Israel Omen too. And the events are significant. So this is not spoken in the spirit of fear. This is spoken in the spirit of being watchful and sober. Because the Lord takes care of his kids, flat out. You know, I lived in New Orleans, never evacuated for a storm in my life. Hurricane Ivan hit the year before Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
My old son and I were standing on the levee, just digging the breeze. There was no rain. We were on the side of the storm. Mm-hmm. Didn't have rain. Didn't leave. I had family members sitting in traffic for 8 hours to go what normally would take 1 hour. Nightmare. Katrina, I wasn't going to leave. I woke up the morning before it hit, the day before. And I tell you what, when I woke up, it was like laid on my heart. Go turn your TV, Dave. Okay? And I just had this sense in my spirit, go, leave town. And I called my mother at 6:30 that morning, and she had been telling me, don't you think we ought to go? Mom, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. I said, Mom. She goes, David, do you want to go? Okay, we're going.
Yeah.
And so we went. And let me just tell you, you know, we've been talking some serious stuff here. Okay. Lord takes care of his kids. We're not to fear. This is the thing. The Lord gave us a place to stay, a friend of mine, north of Lake Pontchartrain. And I was taking care of my mom. My dad actually had to be put in the hospital because he had a heart problem the day before the storm hit, so we had that to do. And we left my friend's house, my mother and I. We were going to go to Houston. And I was starting to run out of gas. Gas stations didn't have electricity. So something just in my spirit said, you know, turn off here. I turn off on this road. And I see a line of cars. So I go get in the line of cars. And I wouldn't say there was violence by the gas station, but there was a sense of desperation and people were on edge.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. If you ever go through a situation where there's utter calamity in your area, you will see one of two things. Great courage and generosity and goodness are just the opposite. So you have to be prepared. And I'm talking about prepared in terms of being armed. But pray yourself up to have common sense and to make good decisions. But you got to be prepared. But anyway, you know, Lord just made a way. We get our gasoline, went on the road. So we're in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I've got a client south of there in Morgan City, which didn't really get hit. And I call my client to say, look, I can work your file. Don't worry. You know, we're going to be moving to Houston to do it. He goes, Dave, why don't you come on down? We have a home on the bayou you can stay at. Well, I hadn't slept in days. I'm not thinking well. I thanked him. I turned him down. So I'm like, and it was amazing I could even get through to him because of the cell towers.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, Lord, please let me get back to him. The phone rang, and he picked it up. I said, look, I'm not in my right mind. Please, we'd love to have it. My mom and I are chilling out on the bayou. We eating real Cajun food. We got air conditioning. We could go fishing in the backyard. It was like vacation city, you know. And then I went back into the city a few days after the storm, into the suburb that hadn't flooded, to go check my place, my parents' place, my family members and friends. And you talk about an eerie ghost town. I knew a back route. They weren't letting people in, mm-hmm. per se. And you had nothing but M16s all over the place.
And some of them were private contractors who were walking the streets.
Yeah. But, you know, all of our my place got hit by a tornado. You know, my mother's place got flooded and so forth. It was a real mess. But the Lord will guide you. Just have faith. Put your faith in Him. Don't fear. Be prepared, but don't fear. Okay? Be watchful and sober.
Where do people get copies of the Israel Omen and the Israel Omen 2?
IsraelOmen.com or Prophecy in the News.
All right. David Brennan, a real honor, a pleasure.
Hey,
educational.
It's been my pleasure.
We appreciate you watching. We're live at the Prophecy Summit at Branson 2012. For PID Radio, I'm Derek Gilbert.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.